You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, October 24th, 2014. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It's Casual Friday. Casual Friday of my weakest horriblest. I don't know if that's the exact Latin. Don't quote me on that. And to round out this week on a high note, we will be joined by the inimitable Cliff Schechter and star of the new, what is it, a WB program? Who is it?
No, it's on Fox.
Fox Entertainment Network program, Gotham, Richard Kind. I don't know that he's the star of it, but we'll get to the bottom of that. Also on the program today, Senate races, 11 races within the margin of error across the country. Meanwhile, 25% of Americans have bought into the poor shaming. And Ebolagate is now a thing on the right. We'll blow the lid off this whole thing with President Obama purposely letting in Ebola into the country. Former NSA head Keith Alexander, he is really involved in some very strange business dealings that it seems to me is trading on secrets that he learned at the NSA, it seems to me. The city of South Miami pursuing secession for half of Florida, and not for the reasons that a right-winger would believe. Dana Loesch, writing on what the Founding Fathers had to say about the Second Amendment, writes mistakenly about what the Founding Fathers had to say about the Second Amendment. And of course, yes, ladies and gentlemen, Ebola comes to New York City. It's just a matter of time. No one on the subway. I got to say, on the subway in today, I did see one lady holding a paper towel when she was holding on to the...
Did you really?
Yeah. But I mean...
That's not so bad, though.
There's literally on any given car on the subway I take, there's, I don't know, several hundred people. I mean, it's jam-packed. You're like sardines in there. And one lady holding a piece of paper while she's holding the thing, if that's the weirdest thing you see on the subway ride, it's a pretty tame subway ride.
I mean, you know, there's got to be at least one person in all of New York now walking around in a full, like, hazmat suit.
Yes, no, I know, my wife.
Oh,
my wife has she's got a full-blown hazmat suit, has Saul in it. And, yeah, we have Saul is now in
a tiny hazmat suit.
Myla and Saul now they have these big blow-up plastic bags that they're walking around.
They're in, like, those bubbles.
50,000 people died of the flu last year. All right? So if you are really concerned about Ebola, get a flu shot. Start there. Presumably, what you're afraid of is dying and getting really ill. So get a flu shot.
I'm specifically terrified of the Ebola virus itself. Not the whole getting sick part, even.
Just the virus.
Just the virus.
I mean, quickly, a doctor who was working with Doctors Without Borders returned from West Africa, where he was helping Ebola patients. He was very rigorous in monitoring his temperature and his health upon his return to the United States. He tried to more or less lay low, I think, while he was here, although he did go to a bowling alley in Brooklyn, and he did take three subway lines, which have now been ingrained in every New Yorker's psyche, the 1, the A, the L. And the moment that he had a temperature, which turns out not to be 103, but 100.3, he immediately called the health department and was whisked to Bellevue, where they have had extensive training in dealing with this. So the only people who appear to be in any type of jeopardy at this point are his girlfriend and perhaps one other person who he was in close contact with. You cannot get Ebola through sweat, according to the experts. That it is highly unlikely you can get it from someone who is coughing on a train, because if they are coughing, that means that Ebola has infected their lungs and they have already suffered so much that they probably could barely get out of bed at that point and would probably at that point already be one person who is being monitored and would be so sick that they would have already been hospitalized. So don't freak out.
There were some interviews with the neighbors that different outlets had, because I guess they were hoping for some sort of freak out reaction, like, oh no. But almost like all the neighbors were basically like, yeah, I'm really worried for the guy. He's a great neighbor. He's a really good guy. Like,
right. It's... Of course. They're looking for freak outs. But I think, you know, the thing is, you live in New York. I think
New York, baby. Right,
exactly. You've got some parents who are apparently trying to form Ebola parties so that their kids can go and get it
yes.
now so that they can then become immune. All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Cliff Schechter.
Confess. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, if you're just listening to the show for the first time ever, you should understand that on Fridays, when we are fortunate, which fortunately happens very often, in fact, almost every Friday, we are joined by the great Cliff Schechter, whose presence is always heralded by the following little ditty from Jimmy Reefer Cake.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and Strategy. If you want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.
Yes, Cliff Schechter, giggling under. I know you giggled today underneath your under your theme song.
Here and there, there's giggling. Well, I've just been thinking about you and your life in general, Sam, and it makes me happy.
Yeah, yeah.
Although I am putting together my own video about what I don't like about Sam Cedar.
Oh, you're doing, so we have at least one active person in the contest based on the video we played, I guess it was Wednesday, or the audio / video, My Problem with Sam Cedar. The good time to remind people, send in your videos, folks. We're going to do some type of contest. I don't know. There'll probably be a mug at the end of it or something.
I don't think I can give away what the topic is quite yet, but I'm going to do one.
I can only imagine. Yeah. I can only
imagine. I'm
working
on it. I mean, there's so many ways that you just offend my sensibilities on a daily basis that I felt I had to join in.
Yes. Well, of course. Understandable. That's why we want to give people the outlet. Now, Cliff.
Yes, sir.
I got to say that I have sort of the reverse dynamic. I don't know that I have ever been more pleased with Cliff Schechter based upon this piece of yours I read in the Daily Beast. We don't do this too often, but I want to talk about this piece because it seems to me to sort of capture the moment in this country right now it just perfectly. You wrote this piece in the Daily Beast. Will you tell us about the police chief of Oakley, Michigan, which has a population of only 290 people. How could this possibly in any way tell us something about America?
That's a great question. It's just your basic average small town America, you know, where people can breathe the air, where Sarah Palin says she feels most comfortable brawling. You know, the kind of place you want to be. Except that in this particular town of Oakley, Michigan, with 290 people, their police chief, Richard Resnick, felt a need, a strong need. And his need was to start a secret police force. This police force would be made up of whoever he chose, whatever his specifications were. The cool thing is you don't even actually have to have lived in Oakley, Michigan, or even ever have been there. But even cooler than that, you get the right to open carry anywhere you want. If he decides, open carry any kind of weapon, gun, firearm, if he decides that you're a member of this secret society of police deputies from Oakley, Michigan, your own kind of little magnum force, if you will. I'm going back to your and my time, Sam, Dirty Harry. If people don't get that, then they're just too young.
Now,
go ahead.
100 people?
Yeah, so for a count of 290, he felt it necessary to have 100 deputies, because you never know in that kind of a town where you might need a third of the population to be attacked by police, or a third population to be police. Well, I guess some of them from outside, but the point is 100 versus 290. That's amazing. That's quite a ratio. I think that's better than Saddam Hussein had. And
now, I don't know Oakley, Michigan. It is in sort of the not the way north part of Michigan. I think it's like about 2 hours northwest of Flint. But
yeah,
I've never been up around that area.
I've been
a little bit out of like in that general vicinity, and I can tell you there's usually like a Walmart and then not much else.
Right. Probably some gun ranges. And, but it gets better than all of that, because that's only really the appetizer to this meal. When you get into the good stuff is that what the town, they've got sort of a village council that runs the town, and they were not told, as the democratically elected representatives of this town, were not told who these people are, and they demanded to know. They sued in court. He,
why didn't he tell them? Were they even aware that he was doing this at all, or no?
They were not.
So the police chief on his own decides, I'm going to deputize 100 people. Some of them will come from out of town, of course, because there's only 290 in town.
Right.
And they're all going to be able to open carry. And I'm not going to tell the town council about it. And I'm not going to tell the town council who's there.
He had a very good reason for doing it.
Well, wait, before you tell us what the reason he did it was, what was the reason why he didn't tell the town council?
It's sort of related. He wouldn't tell the town council, and also the Saginaw News, who filed a FOIA request to find out who these people were, because you'd think they'd want to know. He said in the end, let's back up a second. What the best thing that happened is the town council said, we need to know, and they were demanding it. And what happened was they woke up and they had letters outside their doors from a lawyer in Detroit who Resnick had hired. And this attorney in Detroit sent, I think I should just read the quote because it's that exciting.
Yeah, does it start, so here, dear libtards? I'm just thinking of Chief Kessler in Pennsylvania.
Oh, in Pennsylvania. That guy's awesome. Was it Pennsylvania? No, yeah, that was it. It's something like, it's almost the equivalent of libtards. Here's a quote from it. Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant and online supporters call for attacks against law enforcement and government personnel. To release identifying information about law enforcement personnel under such circumstances would not only result in damages against the village and everyone involved in such a release, it would likely be considered as having been done with malice, opening the door to punitive damages as well. There's no governmental immunity for such acts, nor privilege for attorneys advising their clients to do so. What he was saying is ISIS is going to kill them. And he made this very clear in the rest of it, that because members of ISIS have made it clear that they want to kill and their goal is to kill U.S. law enforcement, apparently Resnick got a hold of a short list that none of the rest of us have seen that included New York City, Washington, D.C., L.A., and Oakley, Michigan.
Now, wait a second. So the reason why he's not telling the town is because if we reveal the names of the deputies, then they'll be targeted by ISIS, of course.
That's right.
Well, why are the deputies there in the first place to fight against ISIS?
That he hasn't answered. Yeah, no, he hasn't answered that. I mean, he just felt like deputizing 100 people because he wanted to. And because, you know, I think if we're going to take this to the broader point I was trying to make in this about where we've been in kind of our post-9/11 world, I mean, think about this along the lines of the kind of government secrecy, from your warrantless wiretapping and the rest to elite decisions made in secret rooms by guys who formerly worked on Wall Street and worked for the government. You know, let's not prosecute her. The energy industry guy sitting in there with Dick Cheney. Basically, it's almost like we've made sure this culture has filtered down everywhere. So elite guys, and let's be honest here, I haven't been to Oakley, Michigan, but I'm going to guess it's probably mostly white people, and I'm going to guess I would be willing to go almost in on any bet that there really are no African-American lesbians on this force. It's a certain group of people, the same group of people we run into all the time, who think that really the laws, and they talk about the Constitution a lot, but it only really applies to them and their version of it, right? And so you can just do this. I'm sure he's deputizing friends of his, other various gun nuts around, as a justification to open carry. And in the end, these guys, there's no accountability. They can pretty much get away with whatever they want. Just, all right, well, I'm a deputy. I don't think it would hold up in court, clearly. And they were ordered to shut down by a judge because they didn't even have insurance, because clearly you can't insure people when you don't know who the hell they are.
And it's also the idea that you would justify it because ISIS is coming.
Right.
They might as well say, like, we're going to, if we have an Ebola outbreak, we may have to,
Right. It'd be the same thing. It's sort of, you know, the three legs of the stool of our insanity. It's this sort of anti-government, militia-minded, guns everywhere on one level. On the second level, the elite government decision-making behind closed doors of a certain select group of people who don't have to follow the rules the rest of us do, and can do whatever they want in secrecy. And the third one is this, you know, rabid, crazy paranoia about every conspiracy, about Ebola, you know, and things like that, as opposed to worrying about the hundreds of people, at least, I think, who'll probably die of the flu this winter because they don't get a flu shot or whatever other reason, or a million other ways that people more commonly die than, let's say, Ebola, that nobody who hasn't come into direct contact with people who have it have gotten. And it's been all health officials. And so that's why when I saw this story, I felt like I had to write it, because it's just, this is what we've got going on. And you know, how many other places do we not know this is going on? That's right. The kind of thing is, like, we're, you know, small towns, cities, where you know, what went on in Ferguson, what's going on beyond, where police have certain rights to target people. They're not getting warrants, or they're getting warrants that are rubber stamped. I mean, I just think it's rotten right now. There's a corruption of sort of our elites, certainly, of our, you know, our law enforcement. And I don't want to claim it's everywhere, but certainly in many aspects of it, in our government, where things that just used to be accepted as part of our democratic culture that had to be done out in the open and had to be approved by people and weren't tried, you know, now they are. And you just sort of do what you want when you want. And I think it comes straight from the top. I think often culture in this country, we respond to what we see. And we've seen a lot of this over the last 10, 15 years. This is where we end up with this.
It's crazy. I mean, the reason for it is even crazier. I mean, he must be lying, right? I mean, he must be just saying, like...
Oh, no. But I think he thinks that'll play. Let's be honest here. We always say this, you know, it's sort of like with a Ted Cruz type character. Is he being cynical, or is he really that crazy? Or are they not mutually exclusive? I would say the same case with this police chief who's clearly out of control. The questions become, you know, and you remember these Oath Keepers and some of these other guys. There's a lot of these sort of small town police chiefs and others that have joined these sort of radical groups, where they've, you know, pledged to stand up and fight their own government if the government comes in and taxes people, or government comes in and passes gun control laws or anything like that. I mean, you know, this is you know, sort of that militia mentality. And so I think for somebody like that, could he really be one of the loons who thinks, you know, ISIS is crossing the border tomorrow? Sure, he could.
Well,
is this just a justification? Now he can give guns out to his friends and
right.
You know, give them a
right.
Double secret probation. Right.
Right? I mean, that's basically, I mean, this is the small town version of the conversation we had with James Risen earlier this week, I think. It's just like, there's just a tremendous amount of sort of either whimsy or corruption, and they claim national security or some type of a privilege here. But it also dovetails too with what, you know, and I hate to bring up Indie Mike in this conversation, but I've been inundated by some Indie Mike emails as of late. Because Lawyer Matthew has been trying to, and he's still talking about Benghazi, of course, and IRS, but now there's Ebola is coming to get us, and ISIS is coming to get us, and it just seems like, in part, because I don't know if you feel this, I mean, what's, there seems
Hasn't
to have been...
Felt, a, well, let me let you finish. And
well, there seems to have been like a suspension of politics in this country, you know, because essentially Congress has been shut down for 8 months at this
right.
point. And prior to that, it was completely gridlocked. You have very little, it seems to me, coverage, even in the political news media, of these races that are going on across the country. You know, Joni Ernst now has decided, like, she's not even going to go in. She doesn't even have to go and do any more interviews or talk to the media for the rest of her election. And you know what? Nobody seems to, for the most part, you know, except for those people who are aware that she's completely bat crap crazy, and the voters of Iowa might want to know this. Nobody seems to be paying any attention to it. It's all dominated by Ebola.
Did you see what Steve Bannon, he wrote a piece, MSNBC,
yes,
sort of summarizing it? The collection from the fact that she wants to, she believes that we should completely privatize Social Security. She, you know, she's talking about that same, you know, Second Amendment.
Gotta take up arms if we don't like what the government's doing.
Which is treason. Let's be clear that the Constitution says nothing of that sort. That is treason. Okay, she's saying that, and you know, all the other stuff. Oh, we're going to arrest people. We're trying to enforce Obamacare. I mean, it's hard these days because the Republican Party is so filled with crazy people. But in the Senate, at least, if she gets elected, she will likely be a Michelle Bachmann of the Senate. She will probably be the craziest. I mean, she may look make Ted Cruz look sane. And what does that tell you? You know, when Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and some of these people are actually going to look like they've got somewhat of a grasp on reality. And you're right. She just doesn't have to talk to the media. I remember when Rick Perry ran for re-election last time in Texas, he just didn't go to one editorial board meeting. He didn't care. He didn't have to sit in front of the media.
He's the incumbent. I mean, that's what's amazing about this is that there just seems to be the country just seems to be vaguely aware that there's a midterm election coming up. Meanwhile, okay, so while you have a citizenry that seems to be not terribly involved in what's going on, meanwhile, there is 300. Well, let me look at some of these figures here. $1.2 billion more spent in these congressional and senatorial races than in 2006. $400 million more than in 2010. $330 million more than 2012. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of money.
That's an important part of it, too.
$4 billion overall will have been spent.
The editorial boards. Right. Yeah. I mean, that's amazing. I mean, and that's the thing is that, you know, this was always Mitch McConnell's trick down in Kentucky, but at least it used to be sort of, he didn't care. He'd lose the newspapers and everything, but he realized if he raised enough money, you could drown out the newspaper endorsements. Those are once, you know, before an election, and maybe they've got some other critical coverage of you. Otherwise, your commercials are on TV all the time. And now, with Citizens United and McCutcheon and these decisions, this is that much worse because it's easy. They're either illegally coordinating, which I'm sure plenty of these guys do, or if they don't, I've worked with a super PAC. I know how this works, and no, we didn't illegally coordinate. But, you know, all you have to do is look and see what comes out in the media that the people who you're not coordinating what they're doing. That's the easiest way to do anything you want. You release it to the media and you see what people are doing. So right. The independent group says, hey, we're going to put ads up that say this. Another independent group says, we're going to put up ads that say that. And then she says to herself, well, they're covering those two messages. I'll cover this third one. And, you know, boom. And you've got tons of money drowning out and you don't have to worry about newspapers. Or, you know, you're like Cory Gardner in Colorado. And until that recent debate, you just literally sit there and think you can pull the Jedi mind trick on anybody, you get away with it. You know, it's like, do you believe in personhood? No, I don't. But it says right there, personhood, and your name on it. Nope, doesn't exist. And you basically just sit there and not acknowledge it. And eventually they just give up.
This is the thing that I think...
And then the Denver Post endorses you.
This is the thing I think that when Citizen United came down, and certainly it was not contemplated by the five justices who voted to strike down campaign finance laws, and I'm not even, please don't mistake what I'm saying as giving them credit for actually looking at this at that level, but even those who criticized the focus was all on like the federal level elections, right? I mean, there is the local races and you know, obviously Congress federal elections, but there's tons of money now, hundreds upon hundreds of millions of dollars being poured into state races, statewide races. I mean, the money, it just seems to be just sort of, you know, leaving everything else in the dust at this point. And you see more and more of it with the action of, you know, how are you going to be a candidate for an office? You're not an incumbent. You can't But the strategy for you is to hide, essentially, because, you know, she doesn't want to go out there and actually have to talk about her positions, because she knows her base knows that she's one way. And if she says that to the rest of the state, they're going to think she's crazy. And if she doesn't say that to the rest of the state, her base is going to say, wait, she's a sellout. I'm not going to vote for her. And,
right.
and this enormous amount of money also prevents that. And it's not that endorsements are that relevant from these editorial boards. Maybe they are, but I don't think they are. But the real issue is that you actually got to go on the record about something.
Right. And let me say one other thing as sort of an addendum to what you were saying, because it's amazing. You're talking about like local elections, and they are. I mean, this is what they realized, and they took advantage of it in 2010, that is still enormously affecting our politics, which is they flooded local legislative races with, you know, I worked on local legislative races, for example, in 2008. And if somebody had raised and spent $100,000, you know, and that was a lot of money. And the party might kick in another $100,000, and you know they may. But I mean, that's what you were talking about back before Citizens United. And you know, I'm in Ohio, and Ohio is not maybe New York, but you know, it's got Cleveland and Cincinnati. There's some expensive markets here, comparatively. But you know, in some of these other places, it was probably even much less money. You could probably win a state legislative seat with, who knows, $50,000, $75,000. They were dumping millions into these seats. And so you had that happen in 2010, and they have since. Here's something interesting that I had just read, that right now they're trying to pass a fracking ban in Santa Monica. So we're talking about a county now.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's go even below to these, you know, ballot measures like this. Already $7.6 million in oil money has come in to fight it, to try to convince people to
Chevron
vote
basically that. Buying that whole thing.
Yeah. So I mean that. So that. So what you're talking about now is it's something that's directly in your interest, right? It's fracking, so it's in your interest of your oil company. A lot of these guys obviously do oil and gas, and you're not even hiding it anymore. I mean, it's basically the oil companies are coming in, and essentially they're buying that space to frack in it, and they're buying it through, instead of buying it by offering somebody a price who owns it. They're just buying it through an election.
Yeah.
And this is completely legal at this point. So, I mean, local initiatives having almost $8 million come in, and you know, we're still over a week away from the election.
Crazy. All right, let's just turn. We only have about another 5-6 minutes here, and I want to turn to some of the races, but and you know how averse I am to patting myself on the back, and certainly other people on the back. But you deserve a pat on the back, and I deserve a pat on the back, or maybe the shoulder. I'm not sure. I get confused in which body part I should be patting. But
if you're playing football, it's the butt. It just sort of depends, you know, what you're doing.
Story in the Washington Post last night, Lori Montgomery, I believe it was the Post, that. You've got a lot of Republicans now running on the fact that they're going to protect Social Security more than the Democrat they're running against, basically because of the attempts at cuts to Social Security via the CPI. And, you know, those people who followed our prescription, we're now seeing late in the game a couple of Democrats start to push the Social Security stuff more, because this is the stuff that, you know, we've been saying from the beginning. This is Social Security is the perfect thing for Democrats to be running on, expanding it, both from a policy standpoint and a political standpoint. And you see it when, you know, they have to do this. I think even down in Louisiana, she is, I can't remember her name now.
Mary Landrieu.
Mary Landrieu.
She's running on protecting Social Security.
Yeah.
Remember, she's a new Democrat, third wayer.
Yep.
Mark Udall, who I think is terrific on privacy issues, but has been more moderate on other things. In fact, was an honorary chair of Third Way. Sound familiar? Now running on protecting Social Security, which I think, if you know what he should be doing and what Mary Landrieu should be doing, they should be talking about expanding it.
That yep. would,
I'm not saying, I'm
and
glad
they should
they're
be doing
they're protecting
this
it.
4 months ago.
Right, and that's what Bruce Braley is doing in Iowa, and that's what Rick Wyland is doing in South Dakota. And why do we see them, you know, them in the position they're in? I mean, let's be honest here. Joni Ernst has hid some of her crazy. The media let her get away with it. Braley had a lot of gaffes,
yep.
But since he's come out running as populist as hell, he'd gotten to the point where he's a couple points down, and now it's margin of error stuff again.
Yep.
And Weiland gaining in those polls the way he was. I mean, and you can see it. MoveOn just did a poll, and they looked at what the strongest messages were, and it was simple that you weren't going to let people getting away with cheating on and paying their taxes through ridiculous, Wall Street loopholes, that you were going to save or protect Social Security, Medicare, and not let them be cut, and that you were going to support public education and stand up to the people trying to cut it. We know all this stuff, and particularly in a midterm election where the electorate is older and whiter, I mean, even the whiter part doesn't matter, older, well, of course Social Security is going to play a bigger role.
Yeah.
And it just, again, of course it's good policy. You and I know that. But the other part of it is, I mean, how dumb can some of these people continue to be on the politics of this?
It's not about dumb. It's not about dumb for a lot of these people. Because Mary Landrieu, look, if she knows she's going to this in the late stages, trying to, Hail Mary pass it, right? And same with Udall. If they're going to this in the late stages, this is their Hail Mary pass. They know, and they have known from the beginning, that this is the way to go, but they don't want to be put into that box because they have to answer to their oligarch friends or their plutocrats. But when it comes to, I got to use it because I got to get elected. I mean, this is what they do. And
no, you're right. But a few of them are going to have to ask themselves during this last week, how much do they want to be reelected? And I mean, Braley has been catching up. Weiland's been shooting up. The trends in both those cases are good right now. I think most of all, I would ask somebody like Mark Udall, who has been running against Gardner, who's a snake and lies straight out about his personal position and other things. And it seems now that he stopped the bleeding, but Udall is a couple points behind pretty steadily, 2, 3, something like that. Turnout certainly should help. Mail-in ballots in Colorado should help a lot. Because they're saying right now the turnout's looking like it's going to be more towards what it is in a presidential year. There's just a big story on that in Colorado. That should hugely help.
Yeah, we should say they've mailed out like something like 3 million ballots,
Significantly
more than in 2012 even.
That's right. But if you want to close this thing down, if you want to make sure you win, and these messages are right there, what is going to hold you up? Is some oligarch that may benefit you in the future winning or losing right now? Right now, you need to commit to raising Social Security and to protecting public education from the privatizers. And you say those two messages, you will win.
And the reason why we're seeing them even edge close to that at this point, I mean, this is what this illustrates. It illustrates that, A, they know that this is very potent politically and can help them. B,
yes.
They also know that it is dangerous for them to do this if they don't need to do it, because it boxes them in, and it actually, we see it all the time. Politicians run on positions and then they don't execute them when they get into office, but there is some currency to those promises, particularly in so far as it moves the conversation in that direction, the Overton window, as it were, particularly when you have senators who are in the Senate calling for this, and it makes you vulnerable to be attacked on it if you shift your position. So that's the value. From the perspective of people like us, that's the value in trying to convince people like a Landrieu or a Udall to adopt this position while they're campaigning. Because even if you're cynical and believe that they don't believe it, it does push the ball forward. Even if we all know they're not going to necessarily carry through or don't want to. And that's why they come to it late, only when they're in desperate straits.
Well, I would say to them, Rick Weiland is in South Dakota, a state as red as any, pretty much. Iowa is a purple state, and Bruce Braley is very forward about this.
Yep.
I'd say to Mary Landrieu in a red state and Mark Udall in a purple state, saying you're going to protect Social Security is great, and it's a smart step. But look at what those two are doing. Look at what Mark Begich even is doing in blood red Alaska. and how they're all in these races that they probably otherwise would be behind in because of that issue. You want to win. You want to put yourself over the top. You know, why don't you try? I mean, I want them to be there on the policy. It's the most important thing to me. But when it comes to winning right now, why don't you guys try being like a Republican for once and actually running on stuff that wins instead of trying to run away from your base and run away from what most people stand for? You know, again, Republicans don't want run on what most of the rest of us want. They certainly stay true to their base. I really do think that's the difference, particularly with Mary Landrieu, who likely is going to go to a December or January runoff, where she's going to have an extra period of time of a month or two, whatever that it is, where her seat could maybe determine this thing. And the only way she's going to win is if she's populist enough to win middle-class voters to keep them with her.
All right. Well, Cliff, I'm not sure that we'll be doing this next Friday. Next Friday is Halloween, and strange things happen on Halloween around here. I think you know that. But we will definitely – but I'll be in touch next week, and we should have you on either the following Monday or Tuesday, Election Day, so that we can do a wrap-up at that time or something to that effect.
All right, buddy? Perfect.
All right. I'll be in touch.
All right.
Cliff Schecter, everyone.
I'll go back to working on my my complaints about you.
There you go. Cliff Schecter filling out the My Problem with Sam Cedar video. Got to get back to that quickly. All right, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, Richard Kind. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. It is always a pleasure to welcome our next guest on the program. He is a renowned actor, provocateur, maybe.
Provocateur?
Sure.
Of whom?
I don't know. Okay. Sometimes me, you and I. Sometimes you've provoked me in the past. He is the star of Gotham. On the Fox Network.
Exactly. That is the exact word I want to use. I am the star of Gotham.
You play the title role of Gotham,
I'm
or
a
Batman.
Piece of chewed parsley. I am a piece of chewed parsley on a plate of meat and potatoes called Gotham.
There it is, Richard Kind. The tastiest, most satisfying, most nutritious piece of chewed parsley.
I need your breath. Not that great a part. But I always leave your breath clean.
Yes,
that is how I build myself.
That's it. He is the one of the country's foremost palate cleansers, ladies and gentlemen.
Better than sherbet, absolutely.
Richard, how have you been? We don't see each other anymore.
I know you move away, and this is what you do. You move out to where the land is green and spacious.
Indeed.
The high buildings.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, first of all, let me tell you where I am now, because it makes me laugh where I'm having it. You know how I love to play golf.
Yes. In fact, we have done many interviews with you, or at least one, on the golf course.
On the golf course. I am at the golf course. I'm at a friend's country club in New Jersey. And I said, before we start, I have to make a phone call because I've got to be on radio.
But wait a second.
To be on radio.
It's rather inclement, isn't it? You're in New Jersey at a golf.
No.
Is it an indoor golf course?
No, it's not inclement. There's no rain, and is it 60 degrees, 58 degrees? It's fine.
So
at the country club, there is what's called a sleeping room. Various places have a place where you can go take a nap. I am in a room that is called the sleeping room at this country club. And no cell phones are allowed for obvious reasons, but there's nobody sleeping in here. So there you go. I'm talking here. But it's very quiet.
Wow.
And I have privacy.
When we're finished,
I go out on the golf course.
I love it. And nobody napping. So what happens? Like old guys come in there and nap? I mean, what's going on?
If I am an old guy, I would go in and take a nap. If I needed to take a nap, I'd come in here. Very comfortable chairs. They lean all the way back. This might as well be Passover because I am sitting in a reclining position.
I'm
absolutely prone, if you must know. I am as if I'm on a mattress.
So what do they do? Are they flying you out to L.A. now to shoot all these Gothams or what?
No, Gotham shoots in New York.
Oh, it does. I had no idea.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a nice gig.
Shoots out by Williamsburg.
Oh, you know what? I'm not in Williamsburg, buddy. That's too hip.
Well, it shoots at Steiner Studios, which is in Brooklyn.
Oh, okay. I had no idea.
That's what it is.
I had no idea. Wow, that's very convenient.
What you should watch is, and you should go on Amazon. First of all, I'll recommend something, but you should go on Amazon.com.
Yeah. I'm aware of it. Yeah, no,
this,
Amazon. That's it. Amazon.com?
Or Amazon.com.
Okay, I just wanted to write that down. All right.
Okay. And watch the pilot Red Oaks, OAKS, Red Oaks. It's wonderful. Really, really, really wonderful. And there was a time, you know, Amazon has a very populous way of seeing whether or not a show works. They put it online,
yeah,
and people vote for it. What they do, they can monitor if you watch the whole show. They can monitor if you turn it off, when you turn it off, how many people watching it, and then you take a survey at the end. Would you watch this? Is this a good show? Blah, blah, blah. And that's how they pick up a TV show. It's not the suits. It's the people. And needless to say, about 3 or 4 weeks ago, my show was picked up. It's
really?
Called Red Oaks.
So wait a second. Tell me about the show. What are you do you play the mayor of Red Oaks?
I am by no means the lead. I play the lead of the father of the lead, and it's really good. It's
who plays the lead?
And smart. A kid named Craig Robinson, who you've never seen. He's a lovely, lovely young actor. He's from Britain, and he's great. He's great. You can't tell he's from Britain. And you don't know anybody in the show. It's really about young people. He plays a kid who's in college who takes a job as an assistant tennis pro at a country club.
Oh.
And it's a combination. I say it's a combination of Caddyshack and the Flamingo Kid.
Interesting. Now
that's what I would call it. Yes.
Now let me ask you this: Are you not getting tired of this whole thing where British people come over here? They hide their accent, and they take our work.
Sam, I couldn't begin to express the bile in my stomach at that going on. I can't begin to tell you.
It's rampant.
It's outrageous. It is. The kid, I did a TV show called Golden Boy, okay? And this wonderful, wonderful actor named Theo somebody. I don't know who he is.
Right. Who cares?
Has a voice teacher, an accent teacher, and he's playing. Now, he's handsome, built like a brick shit house, and just a stud and a great actor. But are you telling me that none of those actors lived in America? But he was really good. Now, thank goodness for him, Golden Boy was canceled because he went on to do the second of the Catching Fire, what do you call it, Mockingjay. What am I talking about? Those books that became movies.
The Hunter.
Jennifer Lawrence.
The Hunter.
The Hunger Games. Hunger Games.
Hunger Games.
He is the lead. He's the lead, I believe, in the Hunger Games. He's the hunky lead, and he's great. He's not good. He's great and a sweetheart of a guy. I mean, so nice. Just a
all right. Well, Richard, you don't have
actor.
To kiss. You don't have to kiss up to him that much. I get
yes,
it.
Yes, I
get
do.
It.
Yes, I do. Because my point is I
Hunger
don't
Games
give a
3.
Damn
no, I get
how
it. Hunger
great
Games
a guy
3.
He is.
Hunger Games 3.
No,
is that
what about it? It doesn't matter. Wait. My point is, I don't care how great a guy he is or how good an actor. He's an American.
What's going
he's an
on?
American.
What's going on?
I don't know.
It's happening
but
everywhere, it seems like.
It is. And this kid, Craig Robinson, who's great and also a sweetheart and a very smart actor, really good. But honest to goodness, you can't get a 19-year-old kid from America? But I guess they can.
It's crazy.
I bet they look.
I don't appreciate this going on. Now, are you doing something on stage at all? Because I don't know if people realize, but you are also a luminary on the New York stage.
I try to think that I am, and I do a lot. You know what I did this summer? I'm going to tell you a funny story.
Okay.
This summer, I did a play called Travesties. Have you ever heard of Travesties?
Well, I've heard of Travesties. Like, I basically go through them every day.
Sam, this is why you have your own radio show, because you are the great wit you are. That's hilarious. Can I write that down? Because it's too funny to just let it go over the airwaves. It has to be printed.
Actually, we are right now manufacturing those posters that people hang in their house with the sayings. And it spells out TRAV dot and then SD, like it brings it into multiple syllables. And then it underneath it just says like, I go through them every day, - Sam Cedar. It's in script.
Sam, let's get back to me.
Okay. I'm sorry. I apologize.
So I do this play by Tom Stoppard called Travesties. One of the great plays written in the 20th century. And I'm not kidding.
Okay.
It's brilliant. It's other than Arcadia, it is Tom Stoppard's second masterpiece. It's fantastic. It is a play about James Joyce, Vladimir Lenin, Tristan Tzara, founder of the Dada movement, living in Zurich in 1917. It's a brilliant, brilliant play about philosophy and art, government. It's just, and literature. It's fantastic. It was so dense. It's the play starts off with me giving a 22-minute monologue, not
wow.
just Tom Stoppard. He channels James Joyce and James Joycean writing. It's unbelievable. It took 22 minutes, and I continue staying on stage talking monologue after monologue. It's unbelievably difficult. I started memorizing it in March. We started rehearsals in June, so I gave myself 2 to 3 months to learn it. I didn't get any good until about 12 performances in. The hardest thing I've ever done, very challenging, a wonderful, brilliant play.
Wow. And who did you play?
Hold on. I played. So just let me finish this story and then interject. I finished the play on a Sunday night. On Tuesday night, I have a cameo in Sharknado 2, hitting a shark out of Citi Field. And I never... Okay, for the play... Nobody saw it. And when I mean nobody, my mother didn't see it. My mother sees everything. My sister, my friends, nobody saw the play. In fact, it's so dense, about 30% of the audience left after intermission because their brains were going to explode. It closes on a Sunday night. Tuesday night, I have a cameo in Sharknado 2. I got more emails from all over the country from friends of mine who saw me in that piece of shit doing a 30-second bit. It was nuts. It was crazy. And this is why our country deserves Ebola.
That's the greatest lament. But, I mean, come on. You do theater. You do it for the experience, right? And Sharknado...
Absolutely.
Let's talk about that. Forget the stopper thing. What did you do in Sharknado? In fact, you know what? Now
I,
that you
I
mention
played,
it, Mila. Mila saw an ad for Sharknado, or she saw something about it, and said, right, Richard Kind's in that.
Yes. I'm in it for about a minute and a half. I play a retired baseball player who comes back to the game, who comes back to the stadium, and I'm watching, and all of a sudden the Sharknado comes through, and I take a baseball bat, and I swat a bat over the City Field sign in City Park.
Wow.
In City Field.
That's fascinating. Yes. That is really
shown on ESPN. It's nuts. It's crazy. Crazy. I mean, first of all, it's ridiculous that the country likes it. It's ridiculous that people like Matt Lauer and Al Roker and Judd Hirsch were in it, and it got so many views. I didn't see it.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, I did not see it. But I also didn't see your play.
And Sam, you would have loved it.
The
story of the play is those people, by chance, lived in Zurich during 1917 on the same street. That's fact.
That's
they
really?
They probably never met each other. Yes, it's fact. James Joyce, Vladimir Lenin, and Tristan Tzara lived on the same street in Zurich in 1917. They probably passed each other or were in the same room at the library, because that was the meeting place of all the great minds, at the library in Zurich. But they really did, but they didn't know each other. There's no reason for them to know each other. But my character, in his deluded sense, talks about knowing these three people, and it's a brilliant play. It's just brilliant. It's very difficult, very dense, but it's a great play.
I had no idea. That's fascinating. They were all on the same street like that.
I know. Isn't that fascinating? And at the same time. At the same time. During World War One.
Jeez.
Great. It's unbelievable. I know. Tell me about it.
So you're...
All right. What questions do you have?
All right. Well, I mean, you've answered all of them about Sharknado. Let's get back to Sharknado. So,
since you love popular culture.
Yeah.
Have you seen Transparent?
You know, not only have I not seen Transparent, I don't even know what that is. What is that? You know I'm not up on pop culture at all. I don't know any of this stuff.
But you should be.
I know. I know that. What is Transparent?
I don't really need to be.
What is
it? You have a radio program that has to address issues that are going on in the world, and some of those issues have to do with pop culture.
Yeah, I know, but I also have a 19-month-old son, so, you know, I got to wait another couple of years before...
I agree. I got three kids. I don't see anything, although I did see Birdman, which is great.
Wait a second. Transparent is a TV show?
Yes. No, I'm not hawking Amazon.
What is going on with you?
TV. But I know it's a new, it just is a new thing. But I have watched, because I did Red Oaks, when I went on to the Amazon and found out how easy it was to do, I had heard about Transparent. It got very good reviews. I know three of the actors in it, Jeffrey Tambor, Judith Light, and I know Amy Landecker, who I did a movie Serious Man with.
Wow.
And she's a dear friend. So I said, you know what? I got to watch it. It got good reviews. Why not? I'm not a TV watcher, but I can watch it. I can stream it on my iPad. I started watching it. It's not good. It's phenomenal.
Wow.
It's phenomenal.
Wow.
It's life changing. It's also society changing, because I don't understand transgender alterations. It just doesn't make sense to me. To be honest,
I've heard about this show.
Disgusts me a little bit. I don't understand it. I can't grab my head.
Why does it disgust you?
I don't know why. I don't know why. But this puts a human face to it, and it's quite something.
So you've learned. You're maturing, in at least emotionally, in this respect.
Yes, it actually has changed me and given me a different way of looking at the world. I wish I knew. I really, really wish I knew why. I can't say it disgusts me, but I had a hard time wrapping my head around it. And I have a second cousin who is a transgender it chose to be a transgender, went from a woman to being a male.
And mm-hmm. even still, it's hard for you to wrap your head. Well, I guess that's the point, I guess, of a show like that is to
And I'm a liberal man. I consider myself a liberal man, and they're fine. It's free to do it. I mean, I'm not denying their right to do it, but I just have never understood it. I just never understood. But look, for a lot of people, it's taken years to accept homosexuality, much less same-sex marriage.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, when we were younger, homosexuals were laughed at. They were, I mean, I'm going to use a word I don't like using. They were fags. But that's what they were when I was in high school, you know, and it was difficult to accept such people. As I got older, my God, of course, there's no question about it. We've changed our mores in our world. We've changed our politics. We've come to accept it. But when you're raised not to accept it, that it's bad, well, that's what I was raised with.
Right. I mean, that's what it basically comes down to, right? You're raised with a certain amount of ignorance. And this stuff is sort of like you pick it up as a kid, like almost via osmosis, right? Like there's...
It wasn't just osmosis. You were told by parents. That was the prejudice my parents had. And unfortunately, I have a feeling my mother still holds. Although her neighbors down in Atlantic City... You know, they're gay, or the people live underneath her in Philadelphia were gay, and she loves those people. Listen to me, those people. She loves those guys. She's very dear about them, but I wonder if we were to talk about homosexuals, what her actual verbiage would be. She loves those two guys. Does she now accept homosexuality? I don't know. But it's very nice and refreshing to hear her talk like that.
Well, are you going to ask her?
No, I don't like talking about such things with my mother.
Why not?
That's a joke.
What?
Yes, would I ask her about it? I got to be honest. You know what? That might be a very interesting thing.
Wait, maybe we could do it on the show.
I swear to God, Sam. Do it on the show? Let my mother talk about homosexuality on the show?
Well, have you... I will host a conversation between you and your mother about homosexuality.
Sort of an intervention? That would be... God almighty. That would be a very... Sam, you think out of the box. That is a hilarious, hilarious... what's the word? Just a venture. It would be very, very interesting.
It would be. It would be fascinating, I think.
It would be fascinating. Yes.
All right. Well, we should talk about setting this up.
But my mother, in her advanced age, may think the whole time, "Are you coming out? Are you coming out on radio? Is this something you've never told me?"
That would be awesome.
That would also be very funny. That would be awesome too. Yes.
That would be doubly awesome
to think that. Yes.
All right. Let me ask you this. Now, Jill Soloway, who created Transparent. Yeah. Wasn't she a writer on Spin City? Was she? No, maybe not.
No, she wasn't. But she was a Second City person.
Okay.
She was in Second City.
The name sounds familiar to me. I thought it was from there, but maybe not.
She's a brilliant, brilliant woman for creating this. I jokingly say I knew her when she was at Second City, and I knew her in L.A. and stuff. But I can't call myself good friends with her. You know, we see each other and we're very cordial, but she wasn't my friend.
Oh, so you've had problems with
I wish she were my dear, dear friend. Because she's to be on a show like that would really be something.
Well, it's certainly quite great. I mean, there's no reason. I mean, you're an acclaimed film and television star, as far as I'm concerned.
There is no reason why we shouldn't get back together, rekindle our friendship, and make it that much stronger.
Yeah, I think you guys...
The only thing that prevents...
You know what we're going to do? We're going to have you and your mother on.
I live in New York.
We're going to have you and your mother on, and then we're going to have you and Jill Soloway on.
Now what Jill Soloway would be, that would be, you should get Jill Soloway. You should watch Transparent, and you should call Jill Soloway and just tell her how much you love her, because I will guarantee, underlined, guarantee you will love the show.
I'm going to watch it. Nikki and I are looking for new shows to watch, and... It's actually a great idea to have her on the program.
It's only a half hour, and there's only 10 episodes.
Fantastic.
It's great. Yeah, it's fantastic.
So is that the that's the television recommendation? That's the recommendation for the week.
It's always transparent, absolutely.
Huh.
And Gotham.
And Gotham.
And Red Oaks. And I only got into all of these things because they're part of my life. I can't say that they're my recommendations, but that's what my life consists of. Gotham, working on it, and liking the show. It's quite good. I'm nothing on the show. I do nothing. Red Oaks is quite good, but soon that we're going to start shooting in May, so it won't be on for another year.
Wow.
You know,
and so, you shoot that in New York too?
Yeah, that'll be in New York as well.
Oh God.
Yeah.
You got the greatest life.
Quite good.
You have the greatest life.
I do have a good life. I'm a lucky man. I've said that before, but I'm very, very aware of my good life.
Yes. No.
Very aware. And I try and take care of others.
Yep.
Like my children, my neighbors, hopefully the rest of the world.
You are very helpful. You help the community. I'm quite aware of that. You're always, whether it's the Broadway community, whether it's the community in which you live, the support for the school.
Oh, charities.
Charities.
I host more charities or go to more events than you can possibly imagine.
God, I love your life.
You should do that.
Yeah, you know what we should do? Maybe we should do like one of those Freaky Friday things, maybe, and change for like a week or like 6 months.
You know that I want to come and host your show. I want to host your show.
Not just that. You know, we've got to change families. You got to go back.
yeah, but do I have to live in Brooklyn?
Yeah, that's part of it.
Okay, all right. I'll do it.
It's like Sesame Street where I live. It's like Sesame Street.
All right, so what other questions? You haven't even asked me one question.
What do you mean I haven't asked you one question?
We just talked.
Oh, well, yeah.
This isn't even an interview. I have initiated everything.
That's right. I know. That's a honed interview technique. You get the subject to reveal. This is like you don't realize it now, but if this was a deposition, I would have everything I need. Case closed.
Yeah.
The whole jury is looking at me going like, you win, buddy. All right. Well, listen,
right,
I know you got
to
go play golf. I mean, you can't be in there napping. Who are you playing golf with?
Are you playing
golf with some famous?
We've been on 23 minutes, you know.
Yeah, I know. You know, you have some very people, you, of course, as a very famous and accomplished man, you have very famous, accomplished people. Who are you playing golf with? Is it a head of the state?
My friend Marshall Abbott.
Marshall Abbott. Who's that?
He just is a friend.
Oh.
He's a good friend.
All right.
He's a very good friend.
He's a great guy. A duke of some European country?
Yeah, you'd think he could be a marshal. You'd think he could be an Abbott. But he's not. Marshall Abbott, he's just a guy. Just a guy. And he swats the ball. Oh, my God. But, I mean, sometimes, absolutely the wrong direction.
What is the course you're playing on? Tell us the course.
The course is Montami in Tenafly, New Jersey, I believe it is.
Never heard of it. I mean, I don't
know. You've never heard of Tenafly?
I've heard of New Jersey. Family. I've heard of Tenafly. I just am not aware of the golf course.
Okay. Do you play golf?
Not in 10 years. I mean, back in my acting days, you know, that's what you do because you have so much downtime. You go out and you can play golf. And I was never good at it.
And I'll tell you something. I have been so busy. This is my first time in 3 weeks that I've been able to play.
Oh,
so
my God.
Hold on, let me get off the phone.
I got some sentimental music for you.
Oh, come on, though. Come on. This is my passion, and I don't belong to a club. Put it off. It's my passion. I love the game, and I've been busy with the kids, with jobs and stuff. I've had stuff to do.
Look at you. What happened? Did you get held over in Cannes for too long?
And here I've delayed my tea time so that I can talk to you.
Yes, and it's much appreciated. Richard, it is always a pleasure. We got to get together and have some coffee.
You want to know something?
What?
Yes, but you know why I like doing this?
Why?
Because I never see you anymore, and this is how we catch up. And what I'd really like to do is ask you about your life and how your kids and your wife in Brooklyn.
You don't want to know.
I haven't seen you. I do want to know.
I'll send you some bullet points. I'll text you some bullet points.
You know where I am at 8:40 every morning.
I do.
We actually found a new place. We found a new place to have coffee.
Oh, really?
It's yes. We go to 83rd in Amsterdam. There's a little deli there, much more spacious, and they have and their coffee and their cheap eggs.
I'm not sure you should have said that. You're going to have a lot of people waiting for you there next week.
Right.
But
okay.
But I can't make it up there, of course. But we'll figure out something.
What do you mean you can't make it up there?
Well, I can't get up there at 8:40 in the morning. I got to drop off my kid at school, and then I got to come into work.
What time do you have to be at work?
8:50. Nine.
Okay. All right. You know. There'll be days. You know, there'll be a day. You'll get
we'll figure
a day
it out.
You'll come meet me. You know, yes, we'll figure it out.
All right. Okay. Richard Kind, thank you. Very
Buddy,
kind of
you.
Thank you.
To come thank up. You, Sam. Thank
Fantastic.
You. Thank you for asking. All right. I'll talk to you later.
Bye-bye. Richard Kind, everybody. Fantastic. God. What a life this guy leads. Right? Come on.
It's fascinating.
It's just, you know, back when I was doing this stuff, the only show that was shooting in New York was Spin City, which is where I met Richard. I mean, I know him through some other people, but that was like where I first met him. And that was fantastic. You know, if I knew all these shows were going to open up.
Where did that film?
Chelsea Pierce. Hmm. Chelsea Pierce. They walked to work.
Wow.
Make a lot of money. Do we have a song from Jimmy Reefer Cake?
We do.
All right. Well, let's hear it. What is it entitled?
Jimmy Reefer Cake's song this week is called Strategic Voting is Not Fun.
Now, understand, we should say, I don't know what this is about, but Jimmy Reefer Cake lives in Maine, where Governor LePage is running against a Democrat named Moosh, I can't remember, and an independent. Now, the Democrat appears, in fact, I just read something today where Governor LePage was lamenting the fact that this independent was running against him because he thought that he was taking votes away from him. The Democrat appears like he is, you know, the polls are very tight. The only reason why LePage, who is a out-and-out, total 100% nut job. Remember, 10 meetings with some sovereign citizens over the course of 2 years, so much so that his own attorneys had to stage an intervention and explain to him, it is not legal for you to have a county sheriff arrest and perhaps assassinate your political rivals. They literally had to tell him, yeah, this is illegal. And they had to like pull him away from these people he was meeting for hours on end. And the only reason why he got in was because the vote was split. So I don't know. Jimmy could be.
It was split by the same guy who's running as an independent now.
Yes. And Jimmy could be talking about something completely different. But let's hear the song.
Strategic voting is not fun. Strategic voting's not for everyone. But unfortunately, here in the great state of Maine, we got ourselves a governor who is totally insane. Cutler was a strategic choice 4 years ago, but today he's just a spoiler. Just look at the friggin' polls. So even if you hate liberals more than Lyme disease, please vote for Mishu. This one time I beg you, please. I only wish Mishu would come out strong for legal weed. Honestly, strategically, this is the issue that we need. To motivate voters, you should support the legal weed. But if you didn't, now our only hope is just to vote strategically. So if you lose, just remember how you didn't listen to me. And if you lose, blame yourself for not supporting legal weed. Because strategic voting is not for everyone. I say strategic voting is not fun. Yeah, strategic voting is not fun.
Wow.
Very good, Jimmy.
Hit that one totally out of the park.
Definitely did.
Timely, smart take on all of it.
Satan, I prepare.